Tales through time.
This is episode one of Tales Through Time. I'm Troy Newman.
And I'm Keegan Rudwick.
This project will be sharing the life stories of everyday people. So with our first episode, let us explain to you why we decided to start this project. My own grandfather was diagnosed with cancer in late 2019. At that time, I was trying to think about ways I could keep his memory alive. With more than a decade's worth of experience in news, I decided to share his story. And then I decided I could do that for others as well. So I've gone out, I've interviewed multiple people, around a dozen people now, and if you are here, I hope to share their stories with you.
For me, I wanted to help on this project because ever since I was young, I've always enjoyed listening to people, hearing about all the things that they've done. And one of the things I like to do is kind of read kind of like memoirs or life experiences that people who have gained, you know, who are towards the end of their life. I think they offer valuable insight and things that I can apply to my own life. And not to mention that a lot of people who go down in history are not just like celebrities or politicians, normal everyday people doing kind of heroic acts. Some that get recognized, some that don't. And I just think it's important that everyone's voice gets heard and everyone has unique experiences that they want to share. And I think this is a great outlet.
Since this is our first episode, let me explain how we're going to structure this show. We're going to start each interview by giving an anecdote from our own lives. Then we'll use that anecdote to transition into the life story of who we're talking about for that day. So, first off, my mother was 14 when I was born, and just 2 years later, she had my baby sister. At 16, my mother decided to move away from home, start making her own way through life. As you can imagine, being that young, having two small children, can be difficult. We did not have a lot of money, but we had what we needed. That's not always an option, though, which is where our first story comes in. This is a couple I've known for years, Tom and Bonnie Puckett. We will primarily be focusing on Tom's life. Bonnie was there. You'll hear her weigh in occasionally.
I grew up in the middle of the Nicolet National Forest, a little one-horse town where my dad and his twin brother were the first born.
Tom was born in a tiny northern Wisconsin town as the seventh of eight children.
Yeah, there was eight of us in the family. Four boys and four girls. Always had to take and fight with my brother that's 2 years older than me. And then when he got a little older, and I'd want to play with him and his friends, I couldn't because I was too little. I had an older brother named Jim. I didn't get along with him at all. And that wasn't because of him, it was because of his wife. She didn't like me because I was the same age as her brother. She just didn't care for me, didn't like me.
It really struck me about how sad he sounded when talking about the relationship with his older brother and not having one. You could genuinely tell it still sounds painful even to this day.
And then my brother Cecil, he died when he was 56, I think he was, or something like that. He used to be my boss. I lived with him. He was my best friend. And my brother, him and I, we got along simply fantastic. We worked as much as 99 hours a week together just to have something to do.
Also working 90, what do you say, 90 hours per per week? That's
80 to 90 hours.
80 to 90 hours, yeah.
And there are two more siblings that'll play vital roles in Tom's life in the stories that he tells us today.
My brother Willard, we call him Bunky. We ended up getting along just simply fantastic. We get along really good now. I got a baby sister, Brenda. I was allowed to name her because I was 7 years old when she was born. And my mom told me that, well, now you're not the baby anymore. You're the big brother. You get to name your sister. So I named her.
And of course, like every family, Tom's parents played a big part in his life.
My dad, he wasn't around much. He was always gone somewhere to work. I was mostly around my mother. I cook like her. I act like her in some respects. I got a temper like my dad, but it's not as bad as it used to be. It used to be worse. Somebody always got hit in the old days. Not anymore.
I always find it fascinating when people talk about the relationship with their parents. When he mentioned his temper and, you know, sometimes they got hit and he still spoke about him in a positive light. It sounded like he's still fond of him. And I know for some people that can really affect relationships. And it's always fascinating to kind of hear about the difference in generations. How he said, you know, that's what happened back in that day, which you kind of hear that a lot in different aspects of life.
He kind of talked about how his father would go from one job to the next.
Mm-hmm. My dad was an all-around carpenter. In that little town that I lived in, he made something like 7 or 8 of the homes there that are still standing. And he was a very good millwright. He could make anything, metal, anything wood, concrete he could do. He was a real good all-around worker.
To me, that reminds me a lot of the gig economy nowadays. Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just kind of move from one job to the next. If one job pays more, you just go to it.
Well, the other thing is that you always heard growing up that people would stick with the company back in the day for years, decades, maybe, you know, almost their whole life. And nowadays that's not a thing for most people. There was some sort of loyalty to the company that you worked for because on some level you kind of knew, maybe in smaller towns, the owner, maybe you had that relationship, whereas now it's very corporate. Maybe he was ahead of his time back then.
But while his dad was often gone for work, his mother was always there for him.
Started working when I was 11 years old at a dairy close by, and she used to walk me to work because I was on the way to work for her. And she'd come by and pick me up at night and go home, except for on Saturdays. She had to work longer. But she was a very good person, very loving. Broke her heart when my brother Willard was drafted and went in the Army, and then I was drafted into the Army, and there was nothing she could do about it. If she could have went, she would have went for us. I know she would have, yeah. A very loving woman. Very loving.
What was your favorite meal to make with her?
Chicken and dumplings.
Chicken and dumpling is a, you know, if there's a favorite dish, more power to people. It wouldn't be wouldn't be high up on my list. But
you have to remember the conditions that Tom grew up in, I guess.
Right.
We haven't really gotten into it yet, but he did a lot of hunting and gathering almost to make sure that his family had food on the table. He told me about how he had a dog when he was younger, and the dog would distract a partridge, giving him time to use a slingshot and shoot it down.
Scare the partridge up into the trees, and the partridge would turn its head and watch the dog go back and forth. And I would walk up with a slingshot and smack it with a marble out of a slingshot. So I'd have breakfast next day.
I mean, I couldn't imagine. Like, that's a tough way to, I don't want to say it's a tough way to live, but if you, that's all you've known, you know, that's something that, or something you've done, you know, that just becomes the norm. That wouldn't be different.
Obviously nowadays, like that's no longer really a requirement. Mm-hmm. It's a job. Someone will have to end up doing it,
right.
But it's highly unlikely that you will be forced to do it in order to make sure you have food on the table.
Exactly.
That kind of situation. But the reason I mention it is because maybe chicken and dumplings were almost kind of like a specialty dinner for them. Maybe it meant something more to him.
And I know it sounds like him and his mother were very close. I mean, he mentioned, you know, several times that she was very loving, very kind, and just the way that he spoke about her, that he, you know, really cares about her. And I know for some people, they can have difficult relationship with their mother. So it's always nice to kind of hear, you know, the other side of that. And the other thing that was different and obviously spoke to kind of the nature of that town and what the era and, you know, the monetary status of, you know, maybe their families He mentioned that she would walk with him to work and then back, and then also having to work Saturdays as well.
Not only that, but he started working when he was 11.
Yeah.
That's child labor nowadays.
Very, very young. I mean, unless you're on a farm.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Farm work's different. Mm-hmm. He was not, though.
Right.
And while working at just 11 years old, he was still going to school. But then at 15, he decided to drop out.
I walked home from there, 17 miles. Packed a bag, went down to Highway 55 and thumbed a ride, and I ran away from home.
He says that the reason he ended up running was not because of his parents, but to avoid truant officers.
Yeah, I was a little shocked when he said he ran away from home, considering that this whole time he had been taking very fondly of his family until he mentioned that it was just truancy.
So he ended up running away. He went to Chicago for a little bit. Before he ended up moving in with Cecil.
I was very happy living with my brother Cecil. It was also very hard because a person's feelings sometimes for a lady got involved. And him and I got into an argument. And he never would raise a hand to hurt me, but he told me, he says, "You have to leave." So I left.
The one thing that just made me think about was just, again, the difference in time and generation where someone not that long ago in the U.S. could leave high school or middle school even up and move and get a job somewhere. And that be that someone could effectively do that. Nowadays, you know, a child at that age couldn't. You have to go to school. You wouldn't be able to support yourself on kind of the wages that you could get at that at this age in this time frame. But back in that day, you could support yourself.
Yeah, he ended up going to Chicago.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Like, going to Chicago.
What kind of change was that for him? That's crazy.
Exactly. That's quite the culture shock.
I also thought it was interesting that he wasn't really willing to go into much detail, but Tom mentioned how he ended up leaving Cecil's home over feelings for a particular woman. I don't know how old Cecil was at the time. I don't know if it was, I'm assuming it's Cecil's like girlfriend or fiance at the time. Because if it was someone else, then it seems a little extreme. Mm-hmm. To me, that's almost like, it's almost like the human condition, you know. We all want some kind of companionship. And unfortunately, if you start liking the wrong person, it can have a serious impact on your life.
And it sounds like he really wants companionship because, I mean, you hear him talk about his family. You can hear the emotion in his voice. This is, at that time, a kid who's bouncing around. It sounds like he's just really looking for someone to, you know, kind of be with in a relationship or, you know, a close friend.
After being forced to leave Cecil's home, he briefly moved in with his girlfriend's family, briefly moved in with a brother whose wife did not like him. And that's when he ended up moving back home.
I couldn't take it any longer, and I called my dad because he was retired then. And he come and got me, and I went back home. Back home. Yeah. It wasn't the same anymore. I was with Mom a lot, but my father, he was very controlling. He was always telling me what I had to do. And if you want to live here, you got to live like I tell you to live, you know. I didn't have none of that guidance from him when we were growing up.
But like many of the places Tom lived in his late teens to early 20s, it didn't last long.
Got into a big argument with my brother, Willard Bonkey. We physically fought because my dad took his belt off and he was whipping my youngest sister. And I grabbed the belt out of his hand and threw it in the floor and told him not to do that anymore. I said, "She's just a girl. You know, don't have to hit her." And my brother, he just come home from the service and he grabbed me by the shirt and put me up against the wall and told me that he'd hurt me. And I left home again.
That was a little tough to hear and kind of hear about that, the childhood and what was happening to his younger sister. And especially now that we're starting to hear about kind of the family breakdown compared to what it was earlier. I think we, on some level, can relate to moving back home and having to follow parents' rules, especially when we've been used to being by ourselves. It's going to be tough kind of being, as we said, moving to Chicago having all that freedom, then coming back to the small town and having to kind of confront his father.
He mentioned that it wasn't the same because at this point, his father was retired, wasn't jumping around from job to job anymore, which means his father had a lot more time on his hands, likely home a lot more often. That was a structure that Tom wasn't used to when he was a child. He said his father was more controlling now than he remembered because Tom's father wasn't around often enough to be that controlling when he was a kid.
You know, when you're that young, you do have a sense of what's happening and what's going on, but it's not until you maybe leave home and come back and have an interact. It's like, were they always this way? You have to reconcile basically the two memories of this person that you have, the old one and the one that you're currently interacting with. And maybe for some people, you never have to, and that's great, but it can be quite tough.
The reason he ended up moving out of his parents' place was because of this incident with his baby sister, the sister he named. I don't have a child. I never named any of my siblings. So I can only assume that having that responsibility kind of forms a deeper bond with that person. So when he sees his dad whipping his youngest sister, I can only imagine how upset he was over that. And then his brother stepping in, not against their father, but against him, against Tom. I understand why he moved out at that point. I don't know if I would have been able to be around those people anymore either. And while having to move away from home again was probably quite traumatic for Tom, this led to something that helped define the rest of his life. Because where he moved to next was where he met Bonnie.
1971. His
April 19th, 1971.
His niece's birthday. I went down there for her birthday, and that's where we met.
How old are you guys?
I was 18. He was 21. Well, you were still 21.
I was still 21.
Yeah, here we are.
This October will be 50 years for us.
Hearing their meeting and their story definitely brought a smile to my face. You know, it's very much that classic old school meeting. Like, yep, that was it. I enjoyed them discussing the date. He definitely remembered, which is, for some stereotypes, that's not true.
You could definitely hear it in his voice because he remembered the specific date, which is, like you said, stereotypes would almost dictate that the guy does not remember the date, almost like the guy doesn't think it's important to remember the date, but he remembers.
And they were able to find it at his niece's birthday party.
That alone kind of tells me a lot about their relationship and how he feels about it. He goes on to say that Bonnie has made him a father, a grandfather, and a great-grandfather, and they've more or less had a great life.
So you hit it off almost immediately then?
Pretty much.
Yeah, but I was a stinker. Hard to take and live with, and I can understand that immensely. I look at the things that I'd done and got away with. Most guys would be in prison for the stuff that I'd done. If their wife wanted to turn them in, they could have been gone for a long time.
It's all water under the bridge.
Yeah.
It's always interesting hearing about ordinary people that you could just be meeting off the street, and they have such a unique background.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you're willing to sit down with just about anyone, they'll probably have a story that's worth telling. And while Tom was a little bit hesitant to get into this background, he did eventually share some of those stories with me.
Back in the old days, I was a mule. I ran a lot of illegal drugs, and I even had some of the detectives from here in Monroe County. One of them said to me, Puckett, he says, I don't know how you did it. He says, we know that you were the biggest handler of anything like that. He says, how did you do it? I says, I can't tell you. There is ways of getting around without saying words, just numbers. Numbers can put you anywhere here in the state of Wisconsin. I used to have trunk loads of marijuana, bales of it, baled up in my trunk. Sometimes I ran illegal whiskey, not too often, once in a while.
It makes sense why he said that some of the things would land him in jail. His story is so fascinating to me. I want to hear all the stories. Like, I want to hear everything that he's done. I would love to know how he got into that. Because again, small town, 60 people. But I guess, you know, he was moving around quite a lot. probably younger crowd. Again, it kind of maybe stems back to the maybe he had to kind of dabble in other professions, and maybe I shouldn't use the word profession, but other activities to kind of make ends meet.
Tom kind of went on to say how his family knew he was doing this. He even told me a story about how one of his sisters had sent over her son, which worked with the Drug Enforcement Agency, the DEA,
really?
To start investigating him.
And they were taking my garbage and going through it. One day I just walked out the door and told them, you're not going to find anything in my garbage. I'll guarantee you that. But you can go through it if you want to. They've stopped taking it.
My next big question was, why stop? If it's turning out that well for you, what made you turn over a new leaf?
The main thing was I fell back in love with my wife.
He could have lost everything.
Well, that's not what the reason why I didn't care what I had. I just didn't want to lose you.
And that would have been everything.
That would have been everything.
So it sounds like that love for his partner really kind of brought it back to him. And it's a little hard to hear, you know, how we initially thought that it was going really well kind of at the start. You know, they hit it off. But that wasn't the case. It sounded like he still had some baggage. And so it sounds like she really kind of brought him back. So that is good to hear.
Tom and Bonnie would go on to have 3 kids, 2 daughters and a son, Tommy.
Heather and Heidi, they're older than he is.
Heidi was their oldest. And as they'll tell you, holding their firstborn was a completely new experience.
After being the youngest of 12 and 40-some nieces and nephews, just on my family alone, to hold another kid was nothing new, but knowing that it's yours is a whole new feeling.
Amen.
You have that responsibility, but it's a happy responsibility.
I was okay until after she was here, and then when I held her, I'm going, whoa. Now what you gonna do? I kept asking myself after that. You gotta do this, you gotta do that. You always find all these things that they can do. You know?
Well, the one that made you the happiest was Tommy, because that was his little boy.
Him and I spent a lot of time together doing different things. But his favorite thing to take and do when school was out, he wanted to take and go be with his grandma, my mom. So
summertime,
yeah. I can remember him saying, he says, Dad, he says, I can see you and Grandma together. He says, now I know why you loved my grandma so much.
Tommy was born with a part of his brain missing. He would later be diagnosed with epilepsy. They knew Tommy wouldn't always be around because of the health issues he had. But that doesn't make it any easier when he does pass.
And that night, Summer was in the crib crying. I mean crying. And your mom was out in the living room bawling like a baby. Only time I ever hollered at her, I went to that doorway. Get your ass in here and get this baby and take care of it. I said, I'll do the rest. I went over and I sat by her on the edge of the bed and put my hand on his back, and he was convulsing really bad and bouncing, and I told him to go with it. I says, don't fight it anymore, because I'd seen him go into seizures before, but nothing like this one. I said, don't fight it. I said, just go with it. And he took one big breath, and that's what he did. I had my hand on his back. That little dog was sitting in the floor in front of me, Chester, and he was quiet through the whole thing. And I'm bawling like a baby, and he jumps up on my lap, and he tipped his head back, and he started howling. He's crying with me. Tommy died underneath my hand. You know, I thought I'd never be the same without him. But I am, because I have the reassurance that someday him and I are going to be back together.
This is probably the 5th time that I've heard Tom tell this story, and it's still making me tear up. Being there as your loved one, as your son, takes his last breath.
And then knowing that you have to make that call, as he said, you know, it's okay, just, you know, go with it. It's got to be heartbreaking as a parent. I don't have kids of my own. I can't imagine that kind of pain being there in the moment. I can only imagine if it was a family member. Yeah, that's tough. I do like that he mentioned that what's getting him through is knowing that one day that he will be with him again. I think it's a very positive outlook. And I know we see in movies, you know, maybe you know someone or a family that's lost a child, that can really kind of really break you down, break the family down. And it sounds like, you know, after everything he's been through in life, that mm-hmm. he's kind of found strength and back in his faith.
Tommy was a very special person to Tom and Bonnie. He was their only son. Tommy was the youngest of their three kids. And like their other children, Tommy had made them grandparents yet again. But as you may have heard Tom mention, Tommy had a pretty large impact on my own life as well. He was with my mother at the time. They were seeing each other. They were even engaged, planning to get married when he ended up passing. And my half-sister, Summer, was a baby at the time. She was the one that was in the crib. My mother was the one that Tom yelled at to come take care of the baby while he did what he had to do with Tommy. I've never heard any bad story about Tommy. In the stories that I do hear, you can kind of tell that he was well-loved and well-liked, and he had this massive impact on people's lives. And just one night, he was gone. But Summer is not the youngest of Tommy's children.
She come and told us, ask her, would you like to be grandpa and grandma again?
It was actually shortly after he passed that my mother learned that she was pregnant again. And this would be my baby brother, Jackson.
A little bit of shock, but happy. We both knew Tommy would have been so proud to have a little boy. It was meant to be.
And I said, that's God working. Because I didn't have anybody out of my children to carry on my name. Fuck it. I do now.
You can tell that having that son is very important to him. And throughout this interview, we've kind of heard that his relationships with his father, and how important and how life-changing that has been for him. Mm.
Through these interviews, among the older people that I've interviewed, I keep hearing the same message. They want a better future for those they're leaving behind.
I pray that they can give their families that they're going to have in the future a lot more than what I had when I was growing up as a kid. I didn't have the best of anything. A lot of things was patched up and sewed together.
Yeah, but we all made it by.
She came from a world where she was able to take and work at home and everything. We had a garden too, but it was a rock pile here with dirt in the middle of it. And we would go to that rock pile because we would take dirt and dump into the rock pile. And that was our garden. We had them all over the place. We had potatoes in one, carrots in another, onions, whatever, you know. And it got to the point I even made my own clothes. When they come out with, everybody was buying Nehru jackets, I made one. Where did you buy that at? I want one. I said, I'll sell it to you. I'm the one that made it. And because of not having clothes when I was a young man or a kid, I always had to have nice shirts and pants and shoes. And I'd work overtime to take and have it. Yeah. And the other thing I did when I worked, when I was a kid, I'd take the money and send it home to Mom so my sister Brenda wouldn't have to go to school looking like a rag bag. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy. I'm proud to say, those are my children, those are my grandchildren, and I hope my grandkids end up with more than what I had when I was a kid. Yeah. And I hope they have the best things in life.
We heard it here first, Tom and Bonnie, talking about their kids, their grandkids, how Tom is hoping that they just have more, how when Tom was growing up, he had to make his own clothes. They didn't even have a garden. They had a pile of rocks with dirt in the middle of it, and that's where they grew their food. How earlier in the interview, when they wanted meat for dinner, they would have to go out and hunt for it. He just wants to see a better condition for those he leaves behind.
And this is a person who grew up in rural northern Wisconsin, and he bounced around from a small town to Chicago and going back. He's been through quite a lot, you know, losing Tommy. Other people have shared that, you know, do what makes you happy. A lot of people say they'll regret the job that they worked at for a number of years, or they regret doing this. And they said that the key thing is just being happy, doing whatever that means to you. It sounded like Tommy was someone very important to him and, to, you know, to you as well.
Tommy was only in my life for a few years, and yet those years that he was, I feel like I got a really good understanding of who he was as a person, the kind of ideals he had, and how he treated others in his life. He was genuine, I guess, is the best way to put it. He was genuinely happy every time I saw him. We didn't delve much into it in this episode, but we have plenty more from Tom and Bonnie and my own mother looking back on Tommy's life and the kinds of impacts that he has had on other people. We will go more in depth into Tommy's life in a future episode, and I hope you're there to join us for his story.
Thank you all for tuning in to our first episode of Tales Through Time. I know that maybe it's got a little shaky parts to it.
Maybe a little rough around the edges.
But if you have any feedback or anything you would like to hear, maybe more clips of people, maybe more focusing kind of more on anything, just let us know. We appreciate the feedback. We look forward to continuing this and delve more into people's lives.
If you have any recommendations on stories, if you have any input on this episode in particular, you can reach us through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just do a search for Tales Through Time. That's TalesThruTime. Recording in Minneapolis.
And Viroqua.
This is Tales Through Time with Troy Newman.
And Keegan Redwick. Thank you for joining us.